Let's go to Greenland. So what started off as people thought it was a joke, I think, last week, ended in a diplomatic spat between President Trump and a close NATO ally of America, Denmark. So the new Danish Prime Minister dismissed as absurd the idea that the US would buy Greenland, which Trump had suggested they would like to do. He, in turn, described her comments as nasty, and he postponed a scheduled visit to Denmark. So we're now going to delve into this whole idea of people buying large masses of land from other countries. Professor Padraig Carmody, Head of Geography at Trinity College Dublin, joins me now in studio. You're very welcome, Padraig. So, now, this is not the first time that America has tried to buy Greenland. We should say that.
That's right. President Truman, back in 1947, offered to pay $100 million in gold for it. So the US has its biggest, or at least its northernmost military base already in Greenland, Thule. And it's apparently as well the deepest, the furthermost, northmost deep water port in the world. So they already have a military and strategic presence there. But Truman wanted to buy Greenland, I think, in the context of the Cold War. And Greenland was seen as a kind of weak link, a large land area, but relatively, you know, uninhabited. There's only 50,000 people or so living in Greenland, but it's a massive expanse. And it's all on the North American continent. So obviously this poses a security concern for North American military planners, depending on when you're talking about.
So, and Greenland historically has always been strategically important to superpowers, hasn't it? They've always had their eye on it.
Yeah, I mean, this is an interesting question about why Trump is interested in it now. And I think it's really to be seen in the context of domestic politics. Mm-hmm. So some of the economic indicators now are suggesting that the US is headed for a recession. Trump is on a re-election campaign. Obviously, this is bad news for him. When he was asked, Sky News reported this morning, when he was asked about the trade war with China, if he, you know, had any second thoughts about that. And he said he was having second thoughts, they say, about everything. So he's considering his position, but he's also an expert at distracting people from what's happening. So when Harold Macmillan was British Prime Minister, he was asked what can blow a government off course. And he said, events, dear boy, events. And Trump is an expert at creating his own events. Okay. So his the fact that he has been successful in stimulating the US economy in the short term is now coming unstuck. His economic policies were contradictory. The fact that he has compromised American power around the world, and we just have to look with what's happening with Iran. They shot down an American drone worth over $200 million. They seized a British oil tanker. And yet Trump has refrained from exercising military power. He doesn't want to get embroiled in that, but he has to find other ways of trying to show that the US is powerful. And I think creating this phony kind of war with Denmark is a way of doing that.
Okay. Now, also, America has made vast purchases of land in the past, hasn't it? Most famously, probably the Louisiana State purchase,
right,
which wasn't just Louisiana State. This is a huge tract of America.
That was a huge part of America in the South that was owned by France at the time. So, I mean, the idea that Trump would propose to buy Greenland harkens back to this kind of colonial era. So the Americans.
And Alaska.
And Alaska, the Americans bought Alaska in 1867 off the Russians. So it harkens back to an era where indigenous people's rights could be disregarded by the colonial powers. And Trump has shown his disregard for people of colour. He told the four congresswomen of colour in the US to go home, even though only one of them was born outside of the United States.
Okay, look, I don't want to get into a load of Trump bashing here now, because I think this area is very interesting.
Yeah.
So, no. Trump isn't the only one, though. There is a kind of a thrust towards modern expansionism through what we might call economics rather than war.
Yeah? The
Chinese are at it, for example, all over the world.
They are. There have been examples where countries have seized territory violently or used military means to do that. So we can think about Crimea. We can think about eastern Ukraine. We can think about the Falklands. So there have been modern examples of that.
Mm-hmm.
But China is in a bit of a conundrum economically. So when the global financial crisis happened, they stimulated their economy. Investment as a proportion of their economy rose up to nearly 50%. So they've too much steel, they've too much cement, they can't consume it all domestically. So they've come up with this program called the Belt and Road Initiative, which was announced in 2013. What this is it's an initiative to try and build ports, roads, railroads and other infrastructures around the world to make Chinese trade easier and to create a market.
How does this work? The Chinese come to you and say, we will build roads for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what, you owe us money? Is it kind
so,
of...
So China has a different type of globalization from a lot of other countries. So state-owned companies are hugely important in China. And so what happens is this Belt and Road Initiative is what's called an umbrella project. So the Chinese government sets the incentives. You can get low interest rate loans if you're a Chinese company to go and build these kind of infrastructures overseas. And then they leave it up to the individual, either private or state-owned companies, to come up with the deals around these things. So they set the kind of overarching framework, and then they leave it up to their companies to go and do these things.
But they'll often as well, won't they, lend the money to the country to employ the road builders if you're in Africa.
Sure. I mean, there's a variety of different ways in which they do this. Sometimes they secure the loans against resources, so whether it be copper or in some cases cocoa. One of the dams that was built in Ghana in West Africa is being repaid with money from cocoa proceeds. So there are different models. It's attractive for politicians because you get new infrastructure, you get employment, you get a faster rate of economic growth. The problem is the debt that's contracted through time, and whether countries like Ethiopia, Italy or Greece, who've signed on to this as well, can actually repay these debts when they're already heavily indebted in the first place.
OK, I've seen this referred to as debt trap diplomacy.
Yes.
Yeah. So in other words, the Chinese get you into a trap and then what? They end up owning land, resources?
OK, I mean, this term debt trap diplomacy kind of hit the headlines back in 2017. Mike Pence, the US vice president, accused China of this. I mean, the consensus is that China is not deliberately trying to entrap countries in debt. It is seeking to expand its economic and political influence, and debt is a mechanism of doing that. But if you trap countries in a debt trap, they won't be able to repay the loans to you, potentially. All right? And this is one of the things that's happened in Venezuela, is that the Chinese government had a very close relationship and gave a lot of loans to Venezuela. Venezuela has now reneged on that. So I don't think the Chinese government is deliberately trying to do that, but they are trying to expand their economic and political influence. And they have, back in 2011, they had a long-running border dispute with Tajikistan. And back in 2011, the Tajik parliament voted to cede about 1,000 square miles of territory to China in exchange for some debt relief. So there are different mechanisms through which this operates.
OK, so they are buying land. No, this is not all happening in far-off places. This is happening in Europe as well. The Chinese, like, for example, a lot of people will have been through the Port of Piraeus, getting ferries and various things. Tell us about the Chinese and the Port of Piraeus in Greece.
So the Port of Piraeus, it started to have a Chinese presence first back in 2008. And then in 2016, a Chinese state-owned company became the company that runs the port now. And the port is booming, so trade volumes have increased massively. And it stands in kind of distinction to what's happening in a lot of the rest of the Greek economy. So it's an entry port for Chinese goods, effectively, into Europe. So the Chinese have an initiative called 17 plus 1. And 17 plus 1 is with Central and Eastern European countries, some of whom are EU members like Poland and Greece and so on and so forth. But it's basically, yeah, to be part of this Belt and Road Initiative that you'll get infrastructure, and they are building infrastructures along this routeway in order to facilitate the flow of Chinese goods into Europe.
OK, but the Chinese own Piraeus now, yes?
They have a two-thirds stake in the port, and they're the operating authority for the port.
And would it be one of the largest ports in the Med?
It's the second largest port in the Mediterranean.
Okay.
And it's in the top 10 in Europe.
Now, in terms of the Arctic, going back to Greenland, there's a lot of activity there, and this is down to the fact that it's down to our old friend global warming again. Explain to us how things are changing up there and why people are suddenly getting more interested in the Arctic.
So I think there's two main reasons for that. The first one is that the Arctic sea ice is melting. Okay? And what this means is that the Russians and the Chinese in particular are very interested in the polar route. So rather than having to ship through the Suez Canal, for example, from eastern Russia, or through the Pacific and through the Panama Canal, maybe for the Chinese, you can take this polar route, which is shorter if the Arctic sea ice is gone. So that's one reason that they're interested in it. The second reason is to do with the presence of mineral resources, oil, gas, rare earth metals, for example. There are Chinese companies mining rare earth metals, which are these strategically important minerals which have great application, or, well, I shouldn't say great application, but have application in the defence industries. So the US is very interested in rare earth metals. And China has had a near monopoly on the production of rare earth metals recently, so they're interested in that.
So there's a race going on there, essentially?
There is. There's a race. The Americans have been relatively absent because the Chinese and the Russians have these big state-owned companies like Gazprom, which a lot of people will have heard of, the big Russian state-owned gas company. So they're able to do these things more directly. Donald Trump can then say, well, he'd like to buy Greenland, right? But he can't actually order, you know, ExxonMobil or other American companies to go and do things.
I think it's incredibly ironic and terrifying that the conditions that climate change is creating in terms of opening up these areas for further exploration of oil and gas will itself fuel further climate change. So we know that 80% of known oil and gas reserves can't be burned if we're to keep global temperatures below the 2 degrees that we've committed to. So the idea that we're exploring for further resources, it's just really, really short-sighted and quite terrifying.
Interesting, there's a very important Irish connection in terms of Greenland's current status within the Kingdom of Denmark, but outside the European Union. In Dick Burke was the European Commissioner. In his second term as Commissioner, people remember he dealt with Greece's accession. What was largely forgotten is that he dealt with Greenland's leaving the EU while remaining part of the Kingdom of Denmark. And Richard Ryan, Irish diplomat, subsequently very well known in the United Nations, he was the man who oversaw
that. And what were the circumstances?
The circumstances were that Ireland, Denmark and Britain joined the European Union in 1973 together. The Faroe Islands already had home rule. The Faroe Islands did not join with Denmark into the then EEC, as it was, but Greenland was an integral internal part of the Kingdom of Denmark, so it did. Because of fisheries issues primarily, but also because of the other issues around minerals, it was never happy with that. And the Danes delivered a memorandum to Brussels, actually on Bloomsday, 1982, and the said Ambassador Richard Ryan was on that case in the Dick Burke cabinet for about 2 years, sorting it out, because it's a very delicate manoeuvre here, because, of course, it was all ostensibly about fisheries, but actually NATO was a key issue here, because this was the depth of the Cold War. It was a critical front with then USSR, and whatever happened with Greenland, the NATO countries and America were very anxious that it very much remained within the Western security ambit. Mm. And of course, with the Russians, with global warming, because this was impossible before global warming, that Arctic route that they're now exploring. Mm. I mean, Peter the Great built St. Petersburg for the same reason the Russians are now trying to forge this Arctic route. Catherine the Great went into the Crimea for the same reason. It's how a landlocked country like Russia gets out. Mm. And it's the exact same reason that Putin went back into Crimea. It's the exact same reason he now has a naval base in Syria. And you've got to see that naval base in Syria in the context of pushing out into the Arctic, impossibly before global warming. And these are the geopolitical fault lines in which all of this is being negotiated.
Isn't it funny to think that back then, though, they took that very delicate situation with so many different things in play in Greenland, and smart guys and smart women were able to get together and they were able to make something.
Yeah, and very, very talented Irish diplomats.
Exactly.
It wasn't exactly their day job.
Yeah, okay. Well, listen, that's all very interesting. Thank you very much for that, Padraig Carmody. And we'll take a break.
Podcast The Marion Finucane Show at rte.ie/radio.